This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyu Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Well, we have to remember that Hassa has a long history of agreeing in principle with his international allies that he is going to agree to a ceasefire or a new political process, and then a few days later either reneging on his commitment or just not following through and not implementing the action.
That's Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, on reports that General Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army, reportedly agreed to sign a ceasefire agreement. Details coming up. Also, there's an uneasy calm in Cameroon's French-speaking towns and villages after separatist fighters killed government troops. And Burkina Faso is in national mourning after 43 people were killed by unidentified gunmen. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Sudan's public prosecutor's office is investigating yesterday's assassination attempt on Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. Attorney General Taj al-Sir al-Habir calls it a terrorist act with the intended goal of destroying the transitional government. Hamdok narrowly survived the bombing while being driven to his office. There was no claim of responsibility. Interior Minister Atrif Idriss Dafalla says new security and safety procedures are being put in place for government officials. Sudanese journalist and analyst Mohamed Fazari says people opposed to the transitional government are trying to test the capabilities of the government and paralyze its objectives. He says it is also a message to show supporters of ousted President Omar al-Bashir that they are still united and strong. French President Emmanuel Macron met yesterday with General Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army. Haftar reportedly agreed to sign a ceasefire agreement, but said he would withdraw if it is violated by the Tripoli-based UN-recognized Government of National Accord, the GNA. Macron and Haftar discussed the intervention of foreign nations in the Libya conflict after world leaders agreed in Berlin in January to end all such interference and uphold a weapons embargo. Several countries backing rival factions have violated the embargo, and the UN denounced them without naming them. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed the latest developments in Libya with Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis.
Well, we have to remember that Hassa has a long history of agreeing in principle with his international allies that he is going to agree to a ceasefire or a new political process, and then a few days later either reneging on his commitment or just not following through and not implementing the action. On the ground, we've seen this with Russia most recently, the ceasefire at the beginning of the year, but also the UAE and France a couple of years ago when they tried to enforce a political solution. So I wouldn't read too much into this statement by Haftar that he intends to agree to the ceasefire. There is a draft ceasefire agreement on the table, but there are no indications from either side, really, that they're willing to really push ahead with the negotiations needed to implement that. And I think the fact that, given the condition that it requires the GNA-aligned militias to agree to the ceasefire, he's also said he still won't meet with the president of the GNA, Fayez Sarraj. I think these are all signs that are kind of a get-out clause for Haftar, that he can easily say, well, I was willing to agree to the ceasefire, but the opposing forces did this or they did a violation and therefore I'm not going to agree to it. So in short, I don't think that this meeting is going to lead to any meaningful changes on the ground or any implementation of a permanent ceasefire in the short term.
Macron and Haftar discussed also the intervention of foreign nations in the Libya conflict after world leaders agreed in Berlin in January to end all foreign interference and uphold weapons embargo. Several countries backing rival factions in Libya have violated UN arms embargo, and the UN denounced them without naming countries. How do you explain the inability of the European Union to enforce the UN arms embargo in Libya?
In order to enforce the UN arms embargo, you need three key things, I would say. You need a mechanism for reporting what the violations are. You need a way of then punishing or implementing punitive action against those who have violated it. And then also an active policing element, so to actually stop the arms from getting to Libya in the first place, rather than just punishing those who import them after that. Now, the first part is ongoing, so the UN Sanctions Committee is frequently reporting in detail on who these actors are. But the reason we don't have that second step, which is the punitive action, is that the UN Security Council just is unable to enforce the embargo in or sanctions in any sense, because there is not the political will. There is too much division within the UN, too many different relationships going on, and they're just not willing to take that move. Now, the final action, which is the kind of actually stopping the arms from getting to Libya in the first place, whether by sea, by air, or by ground, this is what the EU recently has said they are going to try and enforce. Now, while they may be able to do that to some extent in the Mediterranean at sea, this requires a huge amount of investment, resources, and not only boats, but aeroplanes, ground forces to actually enforce this. And therefore, again, there aren't really the resources, there isn't really the political will to do this. And this means that really the arms embargo is difficult to enforce, even though all these countries are saying in theory they commit to it, none of them seem to be delivering the resources or the willingness to actually take the actions required to enforce it.
Some experts said the resignation of the UN envoy to Libya may open the door for a new political agreement to replace Sokhairat's UN-sponsored agreement that was not adhered to. Do you agree?
I think the departure of Salame will certainly leave a big question mark over what happens next with the UN process. He has been the driving force behind it for the last 2.5 years. And I think over that time, and really since much before that, the UN has been losing trust. A lot of people are very disillusioned with the process and the fact that Libya is still at war. No peace solution, no political process has been agreed. So on the one hand, I think his departure may lead to some sort of navel-gazing by the UN and a look at how a different process could be put together. The problem with this is that will take a huge amount of time and energy and discussion to enforce. So I think while that could happen, it's not going to happen anytime soon. And I think realistically, in the short term, we're going to see the UN support mission in Libya continuing with its current program, even though it's likely to lose momentum because of Salame's departure.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy speaking with Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis. There is an uneasy calm in Cameroon's French-speaking towns and villages that share a border with the English-speaking regions after separatist fighters crossed over last weekend, killed government troops, and left with huge consignments of weapons and ammunition. Civilians say they are not sure the military can't protect them as the government claims. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Mbuda, a French-speaking village on the border with the English-speaking Northwest region.
Alima Matembompo, a 33-year-old farmer, cries as her husband is buried in Cameroon's western French-speaking village of Galim on the border with the English-speaking Northwest region. Her husband, a cattle rancher who was returning from selling cattle in their village market, was killed Saturday night or early Sunday morning. Among the nearly 20 people who have come out to bury the man is 47-year-old cattle feed supplier John Tata, who says that since the attack took place, the village market has been closed.
Most of us that we are doing businesses, all the businesses are grounded. So we really pray for a rapid solution to this crisis.
Tata said most business people who were about to leave the village when the attack occurred escaped to the surrounding hills and bushes and have not been seen since. Many villagers have also escaped to safer localities out of their village, especially to the neighboring French-speaking town of Buda. Daniel Eyum, the most senior government official in Galim, an administrative unit in the French-speaking western region of Cameroon, says more than 60 armed separatist fighters crossed from the English-speaking region, shooting indiscriminately and creating panic. He says they interrupted the power supply and plunged the village into darkness before attacking military positions for supplies.
C'était une attaque simultanée de la brigade.
He says the simultaneous attacks on the military and police stations in Galim lasted for more than an hour and a half, and peace started returning only when the separatist fighters had crossed back to the English-speaking northwest region where they came from. He says they lost 4 civilians, 2 policemen, and 2 gendarme officers. He says the population should remain vigilant and trust their military that has been deployed to protect them. Ayum said the separatists left with military weapons and ammunition. The Cameroon military announced that a few guns and ammunition were seized by the separatists and that it had deployed additional troops to protect the civilians and arrest or kill the attackers.
Asawana! Asawana! Asabwa! Asabwa! Isimili!
But a video shared by the separatists on social media shows their fighters displaying at least 30 military rifles, huge quantities of ammunition, and a motorcycle with the Cameroon police registration number plate they claim they seized during the attack. In the video, the separatists say they will continue attacking the Cameroon military for supplies. Separatist spokesperson Tapong Aivotanku, who is based in America, said in a video that their troops attacked Galim, and the video they shared is that of the weapons seized from the Cameroon army. Tanku said a bomb attack was carried out by their forces in Bamenda against women who had defied their instructions not to commemorate International Women's Day. Deben Chofo, governor of the English-speaking Northwest region, said a soldier was killed and 8 people were wounded in the blast. He urged the population to be calm as the military has been instructed to find the culprits and protect civilians.
We are appealing to the population to rally behind our patriotic citizens, our armed forces, and I'm giving my word here that measure will be taken to sanction them, to punish them, so that it shouldn't occur anymore here in Bamenda.
The locally made explosive planted along a commercial avenue in Bamenda by the suspected separatists who had vowed to disrupt International Women's Day activities was the largest since the separatist violence started. At Galim, it was the 4th time the attackers had operated there. They have also been crossing over and attacking markets, schools, and military positions in the neighboring French-speaking West region. Cameroon's Anglophone rebels have been fighting since 2017 to create an independent English-speaking state in the majority French-speaking country's western regions. The United Nations says the conflict has cost more than 3,000 lives and forced 500,000 to flee to French-speaking regions of Cameroon or into neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Buddha, Western Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Burkina Faso is in a 48-hour period of national mourning after 43 people were killed and 6 injured by unidentified gunmen in 2 villages in the country's north. It was the latest brutal incident in the troubled Sahel region where brazen jihadists have entrenched themselves and launched attacks on security services and civilians alike. Almost 2,000 more fatalities were reported last year in Burkina Faso than in 2018, a 6-fold increase, according to a report by the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. Women make up half of the world's population, but a recent study showed that corporations spend just 1% of their funds for acquisitions, specifically on women-owned businesses. A Washington-based nonprofit is trying to change that and says supporting women-owned businesses has positive social effects. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Chef Malemo Virtuosa came up through the male-dominated industry of high-end cooking. She was one of only a few female chefs at some of the nation's top hotels before starting her own catering business. Despite her best efforts, her business suffers from something she can't control: sexism. Although sub-Saharan Africa has some of the world's highest rates of female entrepreneurship, businesswomen often struggle to get financing and build support networks. For Chef Mo, as she prefers to be called, pressure in the kitchen pressured her to hide away.
So when servers become so busy, they really push you out the way because they don't think that you can push as quick as they can, you know, and take out the food as quick as they can as well. I think that's why I also decided on becoming a pastry chef and not just being skilled in the food, you know, high-end dining, you know, fine dining and all of that. Because I think with the pastries, I was able to just hide away from all these males and do my pretty work, you know, without them being in my face.
Nonprofit We Connect International is trying to bring businesswomen to the forefront by linking women-owned businesses to qualified buyers and running educational seminars for women entrepreneurs. This is CEO Elizabeth Vasquez.
Women represent a third of the world's private businesses. They're half the population. They make or influence over 75% of all purchasing decisions. We need women and men to be in our value chains. We need them to step up and deliver solutions to the problems that we all faced. And women are uniquely qualified because of their life experience to provide solutions that right now we don't have access to.
And says business owner Belukazi Nkala, women entrepreneurs often find solutions that have long been ignored by their male counterparts. Her company designs work clothing for women engineers, miners, and factory workers. It's not about just aesthetics, she says, but safety.
The one thing that I've noticed is, especially with women, we tend to, everything about the workwear tends to be oversized because we're trying to compensate for one part of our body or another. So it's important that from a safety element, it has to fit properly to be able to be in an environment. For example, in mining, you can't be caught onto something and, you know, something could happen, which could obviously be a safety issue or something hazardous that could happen at work.
For Chef Mo, investing in women is just good business sense.
We're able to run households. I mean, honestly speaking, you get home and you make sure that there's dinner cooked at a certain time. You make sure that the kids are well fed, the kids are bathed, you know, they're sleeping and whatnot. If I'm able to manage a household after a full day of work, how can you now exclude me from a business?
But she doesn't want your business just because she's a woman. Instead, she says, look for proof of her virtuosity in her pizza. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The outbreak of the COVID-19 virus, which began in China earlier this year, has affected computer and cell phone sales in Nigeria's computer market hub in Lagos. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
The hub of Nigeria's computer market is in Ikeja, a Lagos suburb. Known as the Computer Village, the crowded market is home to thousands of vendors selling everything from keyboards to wires. But sales have gone down since the outbreak of the coronavirus in China. More than 80% of the computers, cell phones, television sets, and the accessories and parts come from China. As the disease spread in China, the Beijing government extended a long winter holidays for the country, shutting factories for weeks. That has slowed down imports from China, threatening supplies in Nigeria. Neighboring West African countries also rely on the Nigerian Computer Village for their stock. Dick Austin sells computers and cell phones in the market. He says the Chinese goods are popular because they often are cheaper than other products, but sales are down.
Not to estimate, we've lost some thousands of dollars since the outbreak of this coronavirus that erupted from China. We are sourced from China due to easy assessment, cheap product, and relatively quality material that can serve.
Dike says some of the goods ordered from China have not arrived. Tobechukwu Onyenekwe is the chairman of Computer Dealers Association in the Computer Village. He says imports from China have slowed down and that association members will buy goods elsewhere if the problem persists.
So if it continues, we definitely have other sources to look into and to take advantage of. But the truth remains that the China sources we have been using for some time now has been very, very fruitful to us. But definitely, there can always be alternatives.
Tobechukwu says members of the association want to continue doing business with Chinese companies because the process is easy. A computer and cell phone repairer, Thomas Emmanuel, says business has been at low ebb since the virus outbreak. and the higher cost of parts isn't helping.
Sales have dropped, customers are flocking in, but also the prices of materials we use to repair our phones and laptops, they've inflated the price up. So most customers, they complain that the price of what they used to repair their phones and laptops before has now gone up.
Importers of goods from America, United Kingdom and Taiwan say they have no problem with their businesses so far. Now, their competitors who use Chinese products are looking at those markets for merchandise and preparing to pay higher prices. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
Nigeria's health authorities are intensifying efforts to contain the coronavirus after the West African nation announced its first case. Part of Nigeria's readiness includes upgrading testing labs, conducting screening at entry points, and developing public awareness campaigns. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
A national reference laboratory located in the Gadua area of Nigeria's capital, Abuja, is one of five set up across Nigeria by the Nigerian Center for Disease Control, NCDC, to test for the coronavirus. Lab manager Akinpelu Afolabi says Nigeria's only confirmed case of the coronavirus was discovered here.
So far, of all the samples, 13 samples we've tested, it was that one that was positive. We tested here too. And tested in Lagos. And that is the one that we discovered that was positive. They are managing the person in Lagos now.
Nigeria is one of only three African countries capable of testing the coronavirus in real time. Afolabi says health authorities and officials of Nigeria's Disease Control Center have prepared many weeks ahead.
We saw the equipment we have and see the people when they are working and see that they have what it takes in terms of human resources, in terms of equipment, you see that we have.
Nigerian authorities say it was an Italian man from Milan, a city badly hit by the coronavirus, who was the first confirmed case of the virus in sub-Saharan Africa. The World Health Organization in February named Nigeria among 12 countries in Africa at high risk of people contracting the virus. Authorities have responded by activating emergency operations, including public health awareness campaigns and heightened surveillance at entry points like the airport. Wando Mba is a director of the National Center for Disease Control.
At the points of entry, we have mounted a lot of activities. I mean, enlightening people, checking people, getting information from them, and then at the same time comparing whatever information we are getting with what they are saying. Because a lot of people tell lies.
With more than 95,000 coronavirus cases around the world and some 3,300 deaths, Nigerians are worried about the spreading virus, even though authorities are urging citizens to remain calm. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi AFM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.